love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
When is your capital really not the capital? If you're the nation of Israel, this is not a ridiculous question. When would we ever say Washington, D.C. is not the capital of the United States? No, it's Detroit. No, it's not. Even though their capital is Jerusalem, most of the world acts like it's not. We seem to have no problem with people saying,
no, I identify today as a black woman. I identify today that the capital of Israel is in Tel Aviv.
Really? Really? The reason why is because we don't want to make the terrorists angry. Today, President Trump is expected to announce his decision about whether or not to keep the American embassy in Tel Aviv. Trump's intention is to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and relocate the embassy there. Now, logistically, it's a move that makes sense. It also conveniently is the truth. Symbolically, it's going to piss off everybody who hates Israel and the Jews. But guess what? Do we base our policy on who hates the Jews? I think this is a one of the bravest moves I've seen a president make, perhaps since Ronald Reagan said it was an evil empire. When he was talking about the Soviet Union, he is standing up to the decades of bullying. He is recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The United States is sending a clear message that threats of violence by the Palestinians and others are not tolerated. It's also a message that's being sent that official U.S. policy should not be ignored. So let's go back to a time when Bill Clinton was in office for a second. It was 1995. Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act. Now, what is that? That required the American Embassy to relocate from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Let me say this again. It required the embassy to relocate to Jerusalem. In that act, it states that Jerusalem should be undivided and the recognized capital of Israel. And on a side note, how did this pass? The act passed 93-5 in the Senate and 374-37 in the House. The move can only be canceled if we overtly stop it every 6 months. And that is what we've done every 6 months for the last 22 years. The president has come out and said, "You know, oh, geez, oh, that's supposed to happen. You know, I was busy in the bathroom and I just haven't had time to. We need another 6 months." It's a law that is 22 years late in being enacted. And it's embarrassing that it has taken this long, and it's a slap in the face to our trusted ally. It needed to be implemented then. It should have been done in 1948, and it certainly should be implemented now. If Trump actually follows through on this, it's a brave move, and he deserves a lot of credit for it. And if he does, Israel will finally be able to let everyone know that their capital is actually their capital.
It's Wednesday, December 6th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So there was a... There's a new book out, The Wilderness, deep inside the Republican Party's combative, contentious, chaotic quest to take back the White House. And out of that, the writer, McKay Coppins, has written an article, God's Plan for Mike Pence. And if you just look through it, because it's from The Atlantic, the pictures, you know, make Mike Pence look like, you know, he's an apostle or whatever. But it is not a slam on religious people. It's just trying to understand Mike Pence and what drives him. How can he have two masters? How can he be the guy who we all think Mike Pence is, but then stomach as much as he has? And it's a really fascinating look into Mike Pence, and especially today with the president possibly, you know, claiming, I'll believe it when I see it, but I think he's going to do it today, recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So welcome to the program, McKay Coppins.
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So, McKay, first, let's talk a little bit about Israel and Jerusalem. Does this surprise you?
Well, it's something that he campaigned on, Trump did, and it's something that I know a lot of people in his orbit have been claiming was coming. But, you know, past presidential candidates have campaigned on this as well and then not followed through on it. It's, you know, one of those eternal promises that is made to conservative Christians and conservative Jews in this country, and then it never ends up happening. I still would, frankly, be a little skeptical. I think your "I'll believe it when I see it" stance is the right one. You know, this is, they've cautioned that this takes a long time. Obviously, to build an embassy would take a long time. But, you know, it's certainly, if it ends up happening, it's certainly a victory for a lot of the conservatives voted for Trump on this.
Is it a victory just to officially declare that it is the capital from the White House?
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's more than has been done before.
Right. I kind of look at it. I kind of look at it like the Bear Ears monument. That he can say whatever he wants and say, yeah, we declare, but until you've actually cemented it and there's just no turning back, as soon as you move the embassy, then it's more than Donald Trump. Then it is the United States is on that course.
That's right. That's why I think we have to wait and see if the embassy actually gets built or if actual tangible plans get announced. And that, you know, we just don't know yet.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Mike Pence, because I think this kind of fits into your the way you look at Mike Pence. And that is, he's there because he believes that God works in mysterious ways. And maybe he's just supposed to, you know, stand up at some point if the president falls down.
Right. This is the thing that I found really interesting about Mike Pence, is that he is, by all accounts, and contrary to, I think, some liberal caricatures of him, a genuine man of faith. Religion is at the core of his identity, and it has been at least since college and probably even before that. You know, he really is motivated by a desire to serve God, and he thinks that he can do that in the political realm. But, you know, it's also kind of tangled up in his own personal ambitions as well. And so, you know, when Donald Trump came knocking last year, last spring, after securing the Republican nomination and, you know, said, I want you to be my running mate, Mike Pence was kind of faced with a choice that millions of conservative Christians were faced with last year, which is, can we overlook the kind of, you know, to put it politely, flaws in this man's character, right? Can we overlook this man's, you know, character, his values, his perhaps lack of morality, and still support him in pursuit of a broader and they would say more important policy agenda, political agenda? And, you know, Mike Pence made the decision that he could, and so did, frankly, over an overwhelming number of conservative Christians. I think it's still an open question whether that compromise, that kind of gamble, will pay off for Mike Pence and for the people who supported him. I mean, they did, you know, people who voted for Trump just because of the policy victories that they wanted to attain, they've gotten some things, right? They've gotten a Supreme Court justice who's a conservative. That just today, like you said, the announcement about Jerusalem, that could be a big victory for them. But at the same time, you know, every compromise has consequences. And Mike Pence finds himself in the middle of this kind of swirling investigation over Russia. And you know, while he is, by all accounts, trying to stay above board, trying to keep his hands clean of all of this, when you cozy up to somebody like Trump, it can, a lot of things can happen that you didn't expect.
So
I think that's a fair way to put it.
So would you say that your impression, because I just want to give you my impression, I don't want to quote any conversations, but I was around Mike Pence during the run-up when it still was not clear that Donald Trump was going to be the candidate.
We're going to do the Indiana primary where Pence had endorsed Cruz.
Yeah, Cruz. And, right. you know, right. my impression was at the time in speaking to Mike Pence that he knew exactly who Donald Trump was, and it wasn't a guy that he had a lot of faith in, to put it mildly.
That is, I think, an accurate impression.
Yes, okay. All right.
He is not, yeah, no, Mike Pence was not on the Trump train. Remember when Trump announced the Muslim ban or the proposed Muslim ban in December of 2015, Pence came out in opposition to it. He said that this is, you know, an affront to American values or something like that. He spoke out at other times during the primary. My impression is that he was fairly clear-eyed about who Donald Trump was. In fact, after this story came out, I haven't shared this yet, but after my profile was published yesterday, I got an email from somebody who was an Indiana delegate or was slated to be a delegate at the Republican National Convention from Indiana. And when Trump won the nomination, this person decided that they couldn't show up to the convention. And said that in the run-up to during the primary, kind of in the when it was still not clear whether Trump would win, this person got a lot of phone calls and emails from people in Pence's inner circle who all said, "Oh yeah, the governor agrees with you. Like this is not great. He shares your concerns." And then a few weeks later, it was announced that he would be the running mate.
So let me ask you about that, because you in this interview you spoke to his wife and you've done your homework here. Do you believe that Pence did this for his, as you said earlier, his political aspirations, or did he do this because he thought God's will that somebody is standing in that room that doesn't necessarily agree with him, and I need to hold the line and be there?
I actually think that's not those two aren't mutually exclusive. My impression from all the interviews that I've done, all the people I've talked to close to him, is that he got himself to a point, Pence did, where he believed that both, yes, he had political aspirations. He's always believed that he was, he wanted to be president ever since he was in college. But also, he believed he could do some good there, right? And look, I mean, this is something that all people struggle with. I don't think that this is, uniquely a problem that Mike Pence has faced. Everyone tries to reconcile their ambitions with their ideals, right? Whether they're religious ideals or whatever else. And I think that he's convinced himself that, being in the room next to Donald Trump, having the president's ear, is a way to do good, to promote an agenda that will help people, that will protect other Christians, that will push the ball forward on issues that he cares about. So I think that part of the reason he's been so loyal to Trump is because of that.
Back in a second, because I want to talk to McKay about his conversation with Mrs. Pence, who had some things that were quite frank in the article. When we come back.
Glenn Beck.
McKay Coppins, who has written a great story, God's Plan for Mike Pence. In it, he tells a story of the Access Hollywood tape and what Mike Pence's wife said and what happened behind the scenes. Can you just walk us through this, McKay?
Yeah, sure. This is based on interviews with former campaign aides and people close to the Pences who are friends of the Pences. But so, first of all, I should say that after Pence joined the ticket, Trump made an effort to kind of convince Pence that beneath all the sort of made-for-TV bluster, Trumpian bravado, he was actually a good guy with faith in God, because he wanted Pence to, you know, feel comfortable on the ticket and feel like he was doing a good thing. And in fact, on the night of the vice presidential debate, Trump left a voicemail letting Pence know that he'd just said a prayer for him, which is something that Pence found very moving and really loved. So fast forward to the Access Hollywood tape coming out, and I'm told that this was really jarring experience for Mike Pence, and in particular his wife. One campaign aide told me that Karen Pence was disgusted by the video, and the former campaign aide said that she finds him reprehensible, just totally vile. That's the direct quote.
She could have been quoting my wife. And I think most women in the country
probably
at that moment.
Yeah, probably a lot of women at that moment. Exactly. So here's what's interesting, though, is you remember that kind of the 48 hours after that tape came out, it was just this moment of total upheaval in the campaign. And, you know, Republicans were calling on Trump to drop out, and there was all kinds of chaos. And I report in this story that in the midst of all of that, Mike Pence privately made it clear to the Republican National Committee that he was ready to take Trump's place as the nominee. And in fact, during an emergency meeting between Trump and his top advisors in the midst of all of this that weekend, Reince Priebus, who was then chairman of the RNC, actually said that that Pence and Condoleezza Rice were ready to step in to form the new GOP ticket. Now, obviously, that didn't end up happening.
What happened? Bannon.
Well, yeah, no, actually, really, that's you're right, because what happened is that, you know, I'm told by one former campaign aide that they thought they were going to be able to convince Trump to drop out before the debate that was that Sunday night, the end of that weekend. And instead, Trump was defiant, which as he's often been.
Yeah.
And he showed up and he brought the Clinton accusers. You remember this?
Yep.
And by the end of that debate had kind of turned things around, and Republicans had stopped calling on him to drop out. And by the next day, Pence was back out on the stump. But The reason I think that story is important, and the reason I put it in the piece, is that it raises questions, especially in Trump's orbit, the people I've talked to, about how long this loyalty will last from Pence. So, you know, is Pence really willing to go down with the ship, so to speak,
if these investigations
continue?
I find it, McKay, very interesting that now they're starting to say, you know, did Mike Pence actually know more than he said about Russia? Mm. And the idea, you know, I think Mike Pence is really smart, and I believe you're right on the direction you're going here. And I think Mike is smart enough to see trouble and say, I'm staying way away from that to remain clean, to be able to be the guy that can rise up behind.
Yeah, so that's, I think, a good point. I don't know what's going to come out. You know, he was the head of the transition when all this kind of trouble started, right? But I do think that there, you know, obviously we'll see what happens and what information comes out. But I do think that, yeah, Pence, above everything else, is, you know, careful. He's very cautious, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he, even though he was head of the transition, I can easily see a scenario where he, you know, he was operating on a kind of don't ask, don't tell policy. Right.
McKay Coppins, the article is God's Plan for Mike Pence. More in a minute.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Ben Shapiro is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Ben is going to have a lot to say about what President Trump is supposed to or supposedly going to announce today, that the United States is recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Strangely, that's a big deal, a very big deal. And also, it appears as though, according to Think Progress, that the case for the people against the Bakers in Colorado did not go well for them yesterday in the Supreme Court. Kelly Shackelford has been there. He was watching the case, and he's going to talk to us. That's also next hour.
We're talking to McKay Coppins from The Atlantic, who wrote the article, God's Plan for Mike Pence. One of the reasons I like McKay, and McKay's with us now, is he, unlike many mainstream reporters, I get the sense he has a much more nuanced understanding of people of faith.
Yeah.
And
McKay, you were on the Romney bus for that campaign, were you not?
Yeah, I was.
And
the only Mormon on the Romney bus,
right,
as a reporter.
And I don't know if the other people knew that or not, but you were constantly forced to endure religious and Mormon jokes from the other members of the press. Is that right?
That's true. Although I wrote about this after the campaign, I didn't think it was necessarily, you know, malevolent. It was just kind of born out of ignorance for the most part. You know, people made a lot of Mormon jokes, Mormon underwear jokes. But I will say, by the end of that campaign, I think Mormonism had been demystified for a lot of those reporters, and they came to respect it more.
That was one of the things I thought was interesting about your story about Pence, in that I think to a lot of people who were conservative Christians and had a certain impression of Mike Pence, when the Trump stuff started happening, it surprised a lot of people. It seemed like it was against what he stood for and what his belief system was. You sort of explain that in here with the idea of servant leadership that he really has kind of carried with him his entire life. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so this is a biblical concept. This was described to me by Mark Short, who is serves as the White House Director of Legislative Affairs, but has known Mike Pence for a long time. And what he told me was that this idea of servant leadership is, you know, it's from the Gospels, basically modeled off Jesus, who, you know, washed his disciples' feet and preached that you had to be humbled before you could be great. And as early as Pence's first term as a congressman, he was instructing his staffers to have a servant's attitude when they dealt with constituents. That, you know, his attitude was, we're the servants and we're serving them, and we should be humble and try, you know, try to help them as well as we can. But that attitude has kind of extended throughout his career. When he became part of the GOP leadership in the House, he saw it as his job to be a servant to his fellow Republican congressmen and congresswomen. And then when he decided to take the job as Donald Trump's running mate, he believed his job was to be number two to Donald Trump, to serve Donald Trump. A lot of people point to some of the stuff that Pence does or says in defense of Trump as, you know, how can a good Christian man possibly go out there and spin like this for Donald Trump? But he doesn't see that as something that's out of step with his view of faith and Christianity. He thinks that he's meant to be a servant. He's under Trump's authority, and that's his job.
So does that mean, in his view, that, I mean, you know, we're all servants, yes, but when there's unrighteous leadership, I mean, you know, you go back to the Germans. Is there a line? I'm not suggesting that that would be the line that he would ever approach, but is there a line? Do you think he has a moral line with him where, you know, for instance, if, I mean, the word is that Trump is now starting to deny that Access Hollywood tape was even him.
Yeah.
I can't imagine coming home to my wife, and if my wife, you know, said what she did say when that came out, and I defended him afterwards, she would have a hard time stomaching it, as I would. But then if he started to deny, I know my wife would go, really? Really? how much farther are you going to go?
Right. I mean, like, that is the question, right? And this is why a lot of the people who have known Pence for a long time and who, frankly, have admired him for a long time on both sides of the aisle are kind of alarmed by how far Pence has been willing to go, because they say, look, I get that you have a job here. I get that to a certain extent you're going to have to spin and apologize for and justify the president's actions, but there must be some line you won't cross, or else, you know, you can justify anything like that. But this is where I think it gets into the broader question of, you know, the rest of the conservative Christian community in this country, right? I cited a statistic from the Public Religion Research Institute that found that in 2011, only 30% of white evangelicals agreed with this statement, that a public official could commit an act of immorality in his private life but continue to serve ethically in his public life. So only 30% of white evangelicals believe that. Basically, they were saying character counts. It matters, right?
Yeah. Just for the record, I'm still saying that.
And there are still many who say that, but by 2016, 72% of white evangelicals believed that. So now the majority of white evangelicals are saying, look, somebody can be a bad person in their private life, but still be a good public servant, a good public official. Now, you can debate that, but that is a sea change in evangelical and frankly, political ethics among a lot of conservative people of faith.
Reading the piece, McKay, I wound up kind of liking Mike Pence more and understanding him, I think, a lot more, which was interesting, though we did not have time to get to the most damning thing in the article, which is when faced with at his college, when they come and they say, hey, do you guys have kegs? He sells out the fraternity and shows them where the kegs are. Is this accurate?
This comes from one of his frat brothers, who, by the way, still likes Mike Pence. This wasn't like a vendetta. But yeah, he said that the dean showed up and Pence led him straight to the kegs and said that kind of sold his frat brothers out.
I don't think I'll ever forgive him for that part of it. But other than that, it was a really interesting read. It's God's Plan for Mike Pence from The Atlantic, and it's from McKay Coppins.
McKay, thank you so much. Keep up the good work. God bless.
Thanks, Glenn.
You can follow McKay Coppins on Twitter at McKay Coppins, and we will tweet out the article at Glenn Beck and at World of Stew from The Atlantic.
See, it's really interesting when it comes down to the, for instance, Jerusalem. Why do you think Donald Trump is doing this?
It's interesting because timing-wise,
yeah.
After reading that story about Pence from McKay,
mm-hmm.
You get the sense that the Jerusalem thing is exactly why Mike Pence is there. It's
yes.
That type of thing that
yes.
He says, you know what? Sometimes I'm going to have to go on TV and I'm going to have to say things I don't believe. Sometimes I'm going to have to defend things that I don't find defensible. But in the end, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? Do we get Neil Gorsuch out of it? Do we get Jerusalem as the capital of Israel out of it? Do we get the embassy moved? What else can we actually pull off? Maybe we get some tax breaks and make this, the tax system a little bit more sensible or whatever he believes.
Yeah, see,
is important.
I don't think that Mike Pence, I could be wrong. I don't think Mike Pence is in it for the tax breaks.
Yeah, I think it's more.
I think
type
it
of stuff.
Is for the Supreme Court, for Jerusalem and big, important, eternally important things, which is weird because it's the it's a double-edged sword. You're allowing certain kinds of behaviors to be mainstreamed because you're wanting to get these big eternal principle kind of things, but at the same time you're destroying other eternal principles. So
yeah.
It's really strange.
It's interesting because we saw that in the audience throughout the election. In that there were some people who really loved Trump from the very beginning. And there were some people who always hated Trump and can never get on board with Trump. But there was a big chunk in the middle who I think were very similar to the way Mike Pence is described in the story, which were, look, I don't think I can. I don't like Trump. He's not my guy. However, you know, this is a chance to get something done. And it's better than the alternative. And, you know, we might only get three or four things out of this, but they're important things.
If they
as we said at the time, it's a respectable viewpoint.
If they move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, if they actually move it, I think this is one of the biggest things to happen in my lifetime. I mean, I think this is a gigantic tectonic plate shift.
Yeah, and as we talked about, there's a lot to do there. But this was, I believe, if it wasn't promise number one, it was in the top four promises that Ted Cruz made when he launched his
yes.
run. That, and I remember at the time we talked about it. It's like, that's kind of it's not a sexy tax policy. It's not a,
He believed it, though.
He really believed it. It was really important to him.
Yeah.
And he was one of very few candidates that would do it. I would have absolutely not thought that Donald Trump would do this.
Never.
And admittedly,
never.
If he does it, I'm going to be very impressed
yeah.
by that. But even take Trump out of it, There's 16 other candidates. One or two, maybe, I would have believed, would have actually followed through with this.
Maybe Cruz, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum and Cruz, I think, are,
you know,
I don't know of anybody who would have had to I mean, this takes enormous stones to do.
It has to be something that is really on top of your priority list, right? You're going to, it's a lot of capital you're expending on something like this. And to, I think, a lot of Americans, and we talked about that at the time, and callers made the same point. Oh, okay. I mean, like, yeah, Jerusalem's the capital of Israel. Who cares?
That's huge.
But it is there, huge. It is spiritually huge. It is in relationship internationally, gigantic. It's a big step.
I will tell you this. I mean, as a person of faith, it is a very big move spiritually for us as a country. Forget about Israel.
Mm-hmm.
For America to take the stand and say, nope. This is Israel. We're their allies, and this is their capital. And we will stand alone if we have to recognize it. I think will bless us. It could give, you know, it may not look like a blessing at first, but I think it will bless us and possibly give us more time to work things out.
Glenn Beck.
We have the gay wedding cake controversy that is in the Supreme Court yesterday. We're going to get an update on that. We have a Jerusalem update from Ben Shapiro. But we also want to get to some pop culture stuff. There are some amazing movies that are coming out. Amazing movies. The Finest Hour, the, you know, Winston Churchill.
Think of that one.
That looks unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really wanted to see any movies all year, but right now, Star Wars is coming out next week.
Yep.
This week is The Disaster Artist, which I'm really excited about. We talked about it a little bit. We can explain it later. Yep. Finest Hour, as you pointed out. Molly's Game, which is about an inside poker game. Crazy real life story that looks amazing. And then the one about Getty.
All the Money in the World,
which looks really, really good.
Yeah, some good stuff coming out and some really good books as well. We'll try to squeeze all that information in as the program continues next.
Glenn Beck.
When you book a business trip, you should probably be getting presents for yourself out of it, right? I mean, that's if you gotta go on business travel, you should at least get something out of it. So use Upside.com. Here's why. I'm gonna give you two of the best gifts anyone will give you this holiday season. First, a free pair of Bose SoundLink wireless headphones so you can have some peace and quiet on the business trip. You got to have Bose headphones for business trips. It's like a necessity. And the second is a better business travel experience. You're probably used to being annoyed by your business travel. It doesn't have to be like that. With Upside, they're going to save you a bunch of cash. They're going to give you some options to save you even more. And they're going to really make sure you're really with a 24/7 system, they're going to make sure that they have your life sort of taken care of on this around the clock, proactively keeping you posted on everything from the weather to anything that can improve your travel. Book your first business trip at upside.com/back. Upside.com/back. Headphones available while surprise last. Must be first Upside purchase. $600 minimum purchase required.